I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat's fate and future prospects for Middle East peace hang in the balance this hour.
Events of the past few days have indicated time and again to us that the major total obstacle to peace is Mr. Arafat. Arafat is an obstacle to the process of reconciliation and peace between Israel and the Palestinian people. Therefore, the government of Israel has resolved to remove this obstacle.
Hundreds of Palestinians reacted defiantly to that statement by the Israeli government spokesman, Ranan Gisan, likening the statement to a declaration of war and flocking to the compound of the embattled Palestinian leader. Ahmed Karea, Palestinian Prime Minister-designate, called the Israeli Security Cabinet's decision a death blow to the roadmap.
It will make all efforts in danger, all positive, constructive efforts to contain the situation, to try to implement the roadmap. It will make all the efforts impossible and useless.
Connection listeners, Israel and some Western leaders have said that Yasser Arafat is not a partner for peace. Do you think his expulsion from the Palestinian territories would get the peace process moving or shut it down altogether? What kind of response do you want to hear from the Bush administration about Israel's plans to expel the Palestinian leader? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And over the next hour, we're going to be joined by several guests covering all aspects of the situation. First, though, we want to go to Uzi Landau, who is an Israeli cabinet minister. Mr. Landau, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
May I call you Uzi?
Sure, absolutely.
Thanks. We're pretty informal here. What's been the reaction inside Israel so far? Has there been a surge of public opinion for some time now that has been thinking this was a good idea and calling for Arafat's expulsion?
Well, I think the major issue at the moment is the need by the public to see some real moves taken in order to dismantle terrorism. Now, with respect to the specific message coming out from this decision vis-a-vis Arafat, it's just a very simple message that you really not asking yourself exactly what is going to come out from a specific move, but rather what's the general message. As much as the police doesn't ask itself if it is going to put in jail a major leader of the organized crime, what am I going to have out of it? He must be in jail. It's the same with Yasser Arafat. He's the great conductor of terrorism in this place. And he must know that he's not going to be immune anymore, as was the case until now. And I think as from now on, he should, we should not say exactly what we're going to do to him, but rather he should understand that he is going to pay for what he has been responsible for. We are not going to say he's going to be neutralized in one way or the other. But he, as an obstacle, is going to be removed. And not only him, but anyone who is with him in his plans and the execution of the plans in order to promote terrorism in the Middle East.
Well, firstly, though, what do you mean by removal? We're hearing everything from jail to expulsion to possibly death.
Well, why should I be more specific than what we have generally said? We are simply unprepared to accept a terrorist leader in our place. Let him sweat. Let him think what we have on our mind. But at the time that buses are exploding in our major cities, and Yasser Arafat is basically the ideologue, and I would say also the main performer behind all of the of deliberately targeting women, children, and babies in order to promote political goals. Well, everybody must understand that we are unprepared to go on with it. We have to protect our people. And I think just to say this today, as we have commemorated yesterday, 2 years for the 9/11 bombing of the Twin Building, please note that Yasser Arafat is a close partner of all of those other international terrorists. And the basic challenge we are having here is basically the same challenge people in democracies elsewhere in the world are having.
I wonder if you'd walk us through some of the deliberations inside the Israeli cabinet, though, because you must have been weighing this for months, if not years. You clearly don't want to make Arafat more of a hero to his people, more of a martyr. People around the world are saying this is a bad move. Did this come about because you felt that there was simply no other way to work with him?
Well, it's quite obvious that there's no other way to work with them. And I think this has been also clear. It has become clear in the United States administration and Congress, and it is slowly becoming more clear amongst democracies in Europe. And I think many more people are coming to the understanding that Mr. Arafat, a long arm of international terrorism in our particular country, is making Israel a tasting ground, a laboratory, in which he's trying to use suicide bombers and see if this can bring a democracy to its knees. And if this is going to be perceived by him as a successful tool, immediately this will be exported by other terrorist organizations to the rest of the democratic countries. And I should note that this is not the first time that Mr. Arafat is setting, I would say, the example how to use terrorism. He was the one.
Well, let me ask you very quickly, if I may, because we honestly don't have time to get into a lot of the history, but do you feel at this time that that Arafat actually has the power to control the people who are doing these suicide bombings? In other words, that this wouldn't be happening without his tacit approval, if not his actual approval?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We should understand that 10 years ago, when the Oslo peace agreement was signed between the late Mr. Rabin and Mr. Arafat, it was only after Mr. Arafat has deliberately committed himself in writing that he will no more use terrorism and will straighten out all of the differences with Israel through negotiations. And we gave weapons to him in order to enforce law and combat terrorism. But as you can all see, that this weapons has been turned upon us. And he has been developing laboratories of explosive and manufacturing rockets, El Qassam rockets, and everything has been used in order to terrorize our society. This is Mr. Arafat, with whom you really cannot sign any agreement. And if you are addressing a snake with a European-tailored modern suit, it is not becoming a civilized partner. It is still a snake.
Uzi Landau, we'll have to leave it there for now. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Uzi Landau is a cabinet member of the Israeli cabinet. And we turn now to Sari Nusseibeh, who is president of Al-Quds University in East Jerusalem. Hello, Sari?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Thank you so much for being with us. And what's your reaction? Some people had been expecting this. Had you?
Well, it's been talked about, yes, for some time. The Israeli government in general has been intimating for quite some time that it wishes to put an end to Arafat one way or another, expelling him, killing him, and as we heard, in some manner or another, neutralizing him, whatever that means. So it's been in the works for some time, so it didn't really come unexpectedly at this point.
And what's your read on what this does in terms of Arafat's standing among his own people? Because some Palestinians in recent years had come to see him as part of the problem. Does this now make him a hero again?
Well, there are different kinds of problems. And certainly as far as the big problem is concerned, which is occupation, I don't think any Palestinian sees him as being part of the problem. The big problem, which is occupation, in fact, is represented not by Arafat or the people who support him or the people whom he represents, but on the contrary, by the Israeli government. Now, as far as the people in the territories are concerned, of course, they look upon Arafat as the elected leader. And, you know, regardless of what disagreements they may have with him, what differences they may have. This is an elected leader. He represents the history, the hopes of the Palestinian people. And we all assume, I think, on the Palestinian side, that Israel's determination to expel him, or as Mr. Landau said, to neutralize him, really is a statement, is a euphemism for neutralizing or expelling the Palestinian hope for independence.
Do you think that Arafat actually has the ability to stop the suicide bombers? Is it a question of he doesn't want to, or he can't, or he feels this is a legitimate tool to accomplish his aims?
Well, most of the suicide attacks have been, as you know, committed on the part of the Islamicist movements or the radical Islamicist movements, but not by Arafat, although he's been accused of somehow being implicated. But as we know, I mean, basically, I think maybe 95% of the acts were committed by people who come from the Islamic groups, not by Mr. Arafat. And we also know we have on record a continuous series of denunciations of those attacks by Mr. Arafat.
But haven't some of them come from the Al-Aqsa Brigade, which I correct
exactly
me if I'm wrong, but didn't
you're
he?
Right, you're right.
Okay, but wasn't he instrumental in setting that up?
That's right. I mean, 5%, perhaps 10% of the attacks have come from a faction of Fatah, which is a faction he leads or he represents, and there have been the Israelis have accused him of being directly implicated. He denies this, but in any case, the question is, can Arafat, in fact, in the position he's been in over the past 3 years, and can the government that he appointed, you know, the first one or the second one, really, can it stop or contain or prevent those terrorist attacks against Israeli civilians in the context
right.
we live under, and in the context that, in particular, the leadership is living under? And the answer is really no, and I think...
Well, what you're saying is Abu Mazen couldn't do it. Do you think Correa can?
I think the only thing that can actually put an end, or at least provide the conditions to put an end to the cycle of violence we have and bloodshed, really the only way is for the two sides to sit down, negotiate a final, radical peace settlement between the two sides, one that on the one hand provides Israel with the security it needs, and on the other hand, provides the Palestinians with the freedom and independence we have been hoping and dreaming about, and go straight to that. I mean, instead of trying to negotiate interim arrangements and hoping that one day or another, perhaps we will get to the stage where we can discuss the really hot issues like Jerusalem and borders and settlements and refugees, The thing that's needed now more than anything else is to, especially for the quartet, to come forward and tell the two sides, you know, enough is enough, and let's get down to negotiating the end game. Let's look at what can really settle the differences between the two sides. And I think that will provide the conditions, finally, to contain the violence on both sides.
We know that Arafat's ultimate goal has been to become the first president of a Palestinian state. And just very quickly, is that the prism through which we can understand his actions?
Well, it's certainly an important prism. I think he believes that, yes, that he wishes to go through. I think, you know, we mustn't forget that he is the person that led the Palestinian people to Oslo against the opposition of many people. And he is the person who's been leading in the negotiations with Israel. He hasn't yet got to the deal that he wishes to get to, but that doesn't mean he doesn't want to get to a deal with the Israelis. And I think, you know, if one deals with him on that basis, and on the basis that what he wants is freedom for his people and independence for his people, I think a negotiate with him on this basis, then peace is possible if one expels
him. I have to stop you there. I'm so sorry. Sari Nusseibeh, president of Al-Huds University in East Jerusalem. We'll be back with more of The Connection in just a moment. I'm Gail Harris, and this is The Connection. We're talking this hour about the decision of the Israeli Security Cabinet to remove Yasser Arafat. And we're going to be speaking with Ambassador Dennis Ross, who spent much of the 90s as the point man for both the Bush and Clinton administration's efforts toward peace in the Middle East. Ambassador Ross is now director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. But first, we want to go to Ben Linfield, who is a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor and the Scotsman. He is based in Jerusalem. And Ben, what's your sense of the mood there now?
Well, the mood on the Palestinian side is angry. I mean, I think a lot of people saw the television images at Arafat's headquarters, the Mukatta, with demonstrators coming out right after the Israeli decision to remove him at a time of Israel's choosing and in a manner of Israel's choosing. There were also demonstrations in other locations in the West Bank and in Gaza Strip today, and in Jerusalem there was some violence at Haram al-Sharif, the Temple Mount, holy site. In fact, some Palestinians threw stones down onto the Western Wall compound, and police stormed onto the mount in order to clear that. Rubber bullets were fired. I assume from that there were some wounded, but I really can't confirm that for sure and don't know the numbers. At the same time, the Palestinians have been trying to enlist international diplomatic support to stop the plan to remove Arafat, and they have had actually some success, a strong statement coming from Kofi Annan today. They've also had support from President Mubarak and the EU. I'm sure Dennis Ross would be able to analyze more of the U.S. position than I could do. And there was also a meeting on the Israeli side between U.S. Ambassador Dan Kurtzer and Shaul Mofaz, the very tough-talking Israeli defense minister, who's quoted in the newspapers today as saying that there is a need to liquidate Yasser Arafat. So things have...
Liquidate being equaling assassinating, removing, by death?
Liquidating means killing, and if there was any doubt about that, another Israeli minister, Ephraim Eitam, said today that when the Israeli troops move in, Arafat and his people are likely to resist. Arafat has a pistol, and so Arafat would end up likely dead. And he said, quote, removing Arafat means taking responsibility for his death. So we need to delineate a little bit more and be clear that when most Israeli ministers talk about to remove, they mean to kill.
We've seen, as you mentioned, violence at the Temple Mount this morning. Is it your sense this is just the beginning, time for people to brace themselves even more than they already have been?
Well, it's very hard to say. You know, there are so many variables in the equation. And, you know, I just came from Emek Rephaim Street in Jerusalem. I live near there. And that was the site of a suicide bombing the other night. And it's an open question as to whether there are going to be more suicide bombings in the days ahead. There were a lot of police out. They were stopping a lot of cars. There's a lot of tension in the air. It's very unpredictable, I would say, explosive environment on both sides.
Well, Ben, stay with us for a minute. I want to turn to Ambassador Dennis Ross now. Welcome, Mr. Ambassador. What's your reaction to all of this, and particularly the comments about liquidating? I mean, that's certainly an undiplomatic turn of phrase.
I think we have to look at this right now more as a sign of coercion than a conscious decision to go ahead and remove him. If the Israelis were really serious about removing him, they would have just done it. They wouldn't be announcing this first. What they're doing right now, in my mind, is sending multiple messages. One is a message to Arafat saying, in effect, all right, look, you are on the edge. If there is another big suicide bombing, that may spell the end for you. It's a message to Abu Ala, who is supposed to be designated to be the new prime minister, in effect the same, trying, I think, to affect their calculus as to whether or not they can do something or should do something now, raising to them not so much what they might get if they do it, but the consequences of what will happen if they don't do it. So one set of messages, I think, is clearly geared towards that audience. Another, I think, is probably geared towards us to measure what the administration's reaction would be before doing it, to see, is this something that the administration really cares about, or is it simply adopting a posture that says it won't be helpful, to look like it wasn't supportive, but it's not saying in private to them, you do this and it's a disaster for everybody, don't do it. And so I think this is partly also a kind of test. Does it mean that it has no consequence even in terms of Israel? No, I don't say that, because when you make this kind of a declaration, you begin to remove your own options. So it's not as if it has no consequence, but I don't see it having been a decision to go act against Arafat now. I see it in the terms of coercion, and I suspect also in terms of internal compromise. Not everybody within the Israeli cabinet thinks this is such a brilliant decision. So I suspect what you've got is a kind of compromise design to keep the cabinet together on the one hand and send a set of messages on the other.
Hmm. Well, Arafat, as you know, has been confined to his headquarters in Ramallah for almost 2 years now. That hasn't seemed to have much effect. So you do have to wonder why expelling him or putting him in jail might do any better.
Yeah, I think the critical question that the Israelis are dealing with is you can't do anything with Arafat, you can't do anything without Arafat. Very little is going to happen as long as he's there, and what this is more than anything else is a sign of frustration. One of the points that Uzi Landau made to you earlier, and he's certainly been a proponent of acting against Arafat for a long time, was that you had to do something, given the mood in Israel, given the public's attitude, given the reality that you've just had a couple of more suicide attacks in Israel. So some of this is also a kind of natural response to the pressure to do something, to show that you're doing something. You're not just sitting back and waiting for the next suicide attack.
Mm-hmm. Did the U.S. miss an opportunity here because it has been so preoccupied with Iraq? I mean, Condoleezza Rice was supposed to be the point person on Middle East peace, and she's only been there, I believe, once in the past several months. Should the United States have been more involved, or is it better for them to back off a little bit at this point?
Well, there's two different issues. One is it better to back off at this point? Should we have been more involved before? My answer to the question of being more involved before is a very strong yes. I wish the administration would have been engaged from the beginning. It was not. When it chose to get serious, which was a couple of months ago, it did some things it hadn't done before, which was important, but it didn't do what I think the moment required. When President Bush went out to the area, to the Sharm el-Sheikh summit and then the summit in Aqaba, what was necessary was to have orchestrated in advance, or at least coterminous with his presence in Aqaba, a very clear set of understandings of what was going to happen on the ground by both Israelis and Palestinians. All the best declarations in the world mean nothing when the realities on the ground overwhelm them. One of the things that had to happen was you had a moment. You had a moment because when Abu Mazen became the Palestinian prime minister, even though he wasn't well known on the Palestinian street, there was an overwhelming sentiment, as measured in Palestinian polls, to give him a chance.
Although he only had about 2% of support, from what I read, among the Palestinian
people.
Right,
but over 70% said, give him a chance. Mm. So he had very limited support because nobody knew him. You have to understand, Yasser Arafat has never allowed anybody else to emerge. Anytime anybody began to acquire any kind of standing, he made sure that they lost that standing by promoting competitors to them. Critical thing here is that the Palestinian public wanted a change. If you look at, again, Palestinian polling from the beginning of the year, you began to see that most Palestinians began to turn against the idea of violence. They didn't think it was serving their interests. By the spring, over three-quarters were saying, let's see an end to the violence. Hamas agreed to the ceasefire that Abu Mazen arranged or brokered internally because they also understood, apart from needing their own respite, they also understood that the Palestinian public wanted it this way. So there was a moment there, and the critical thing was to capitalize on the moment by making sure that the Palestinians, in fact, carried out their responsibilities that we should have defined much more clearly under the terms of the roadmap. The Israelis, the same. Everybody understood the same things by what was going to happen, and we needed to establish a clear standard of performance so they would understand that they were going to be evaluated, judged, monitored. We sent out a monitor, John Wolfe, but he had nothing to monitor because there were no common understandings on what was going to happen. So there was a moment there. Now, would it have worked? I don't know. But the one thing is clear, we've lost the moment. The only thing that was created at the end of June and into the summer was a ceasefire. A peace process was not created because there were not reciprocal steps being taken. Now we no longer have the ceasefire, so we really are starting from scratch again, potentially with a new Palestinian prime minister whose context in which to operate is worse than the one that Abu Mazen's was.
And if you look at what's happened since the ceasefire, it's clear that really wasn't much of a ceasefire either. Ben, I want to turn to you for a moment and just ask if people are seeing this in Israel as their turning point. I mean, you know, how are they reading it? As, you know, there was nothing else to do at this point, or what?
Well, the public opinion, according to the polls today, is overwhelmingly in favor of taking some action against Yasser Arafat. And I'm just looking at the Yedioth Ahronot, the mass circulation newspaper, talking about 37% to liquidate, 23% to expel, 21% to continue in his isolation. I think there is a sense among the public of some kind of desperation. But at the same time, and I think Dennis Ross is right, that there was this sense that you have to do something, and that the politicians in the government feel that they have a lot at stake here because the polls are also showing that the public doesn't think they did a good job in combating terrorism.
And just quickly, what do they want the U.S. to do, if anything?
What Israel would like
yes.
the U.S. to do? I believe what Israel would like the U.S. to do would be to give it a green light to expel Yasser Arafat and to try that as sort of the shock treatment solution, which, in my opinion, it won't work at all. And, you know, I think that's what they want to do. I think Israel wants a free hand to take military steps, to take drastic steps like that. If Israel decides that it can incur the casualties, it will go for a large-scale invasion in the Gaza Strip. I think this government has made very clear over the past couple of years, and also during the tenure of Abu Mazen, in which I must correct you, there were 6 weeks of relative calm with a few attacks, but a very big drop-off in respite for the Israelis. I think the government has made very clear that all it has to offer is military force and that it does not see the diplomatic avenue as the way to go. And the Israeli public at this point has gone along with that approach, that more force is going to work.
I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection on NPR. And we wanted to let some of our listeners in on the conversation. Milton is on the line from Newton, Massachusetts. Hello, Milton.
Hi. This is a voice from an outside onlooker, not on the scene, not in the situation. But Israel is really between a rock and a hard place. Ross mentions frustration, a prior speaker desperation. The Israeli public is pushing one way. They need action. And yet the basic thing that happens is when an outsider comes in to deal with your country, you get your back up. Happened with Waldheim, happens elsewhere. Seems to me if the Palestinians are smart, the job is to educate them a little more that the man's been around, hasn't done anything except accumulate money, house in Paris, and they have to do it themselves. You try and do it from the outside, he's a hero, he's a martyr, he's whatever, and you will have failed. It's got to be done from the inside.
All right. Appreciate the call, Milton. Why don't you stay with us for a moment? Let's pose that question to Ambassador Ross. Is it even a possibility that the Palestinians would ever say it was time for Arafat to go?
You know, the interesting thing is there has been an emergence of a Palestinian reform movement that came to, I think, its most impressive point at a time when nobody expected it, and that was in the spring of 2002 after the Israelis, following 6 suicide bombs in 6 days, the last one on the first night of Passover, went in and carried out a broad sweep of the West Bank over a 7-week period, went into every city. This is when the whole issue of Jenin took place and so forth. And everybody expected when the Israelis pulled out at that point that the Palestinian response was going to be anger at the Israelis. And I won't say there wasn't anger at the Israelis, but the overwhelming response wasn't that. The overwhelming response was, we need to reform ourselves. There'd been great destruction as a result of the Israeli move, and the attitude among Palestinians, and there were polls that showed 91% of the Palestinians favor this, was reform so that they would not rebuild the rot that Yasser Arafat had created. There is a lot of resentment towards Arafat in terms of what he's done. But at the same time, Arafat is an icon because he put the Palestinians on the map. He gave them standing internationally. He gave their movement a kind of legitimacy. So you have to reconcile what is frustration with him and the fact that he's an icon. There's no doubt that the reformers wanted to create a basis on which to marginalize him. The idea of a prime minister was the Palestinian reformers' idea. It wasn't the outside world's idea. It was the Palestinian reformers' idea.
It certainly wasn't Arafat's idea.
It certainly wasn't Arafat's idea, and Arafat will resist it. The issue here is whenever you put Arafat under siege, you allow him to do what he's best at. Arafat is by definition the kind of quintessential victim, and he's also the quintessential defier. He defies on behalf of his people who feel powerless, and they then acquire a sense of psychic strength through his defiance. But that's all Arafat ever does. Arafat is basically someone who can defy. He's never someone who can construct. I know Sari Nusseibeh very well, and I have a lot of respect for him, a great deal of respect for him personally, and his own personal commitment to peace. I spent more time with Yasser Arafat than any non-Palestinian, and I can tell you the conclusion I came to is that he is incapable of making peace with the Israelis, because he's incapable of giving up his mythologies. The real question is, how do you deal with the fact that he won't make peace, and he won't help those who might make peace, and he will block those who will try to stop the violence? And that's what leads to the desire to expel him. But you can't just expel him in isolation. He is an icon. He has a standing. If the Israelis want to expel him, then they have to show, in terms of their own approach, that he actually is the obstacle to peace. The way to prove he's the obstacle to peace is for the Israelis to present a solution, one that surprises everybody in terms of how far-reaching it is, and demonstrate, look, this wasn't possible with him, but without him it is possible. If you want to expel him, you also have to come with a policy. You can't just expel him and say, okay, there, we expelled him.
Right.
Well, the net effect of expelling him in that circumstance is you'll see the Palestinian Authority collapse, you'll have chaos, and it isn't going to be a case that after a few months everyone will adjust to it. You've got to come with an alternative at the same time. It can't just be the expulsion option.
So this is sort of the theory of unintended consequences in action, that by trying to remove him, they're actually giving him greater credibility.
There's no question that what you will do with Arafat if you expel him to the outside is you give him a perfect platform to travel around as what he likes to be, which is the victim. You also allow him to say that anybody who tries to replace him is a traitor. And there aren't going to be too many people among the Palestinians who are going to decide that this is a useful or smart thing to do.
We are going to take a break here. Connection listeners, we're talking this hour about the decision of the Israeli Security Cabinet to remove Yasser Arafat. We invite you to be part of the conversation by calling us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection from NPR. I'm Gail Harris, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection from NPR. We're continuing our discussion this hour about the vote by the Israeli cabinet yesterday to remove Yasser Arafat. And the question is, would that mean that the peace process could get moving again or shut it down altogether? We're continuing with our guest, Christian Science Monitor reporter Ben Linfield, who's on the line in Jerusalem, and Ambassador Dennis Ross. And let's go now to our phone lines and hear from Richard, who's calling from Boston. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Gail. Good morning. I have one question, if I might, to Ambassador Ross. Do you see any validity to the practice of the IDF and these assassination attempts on the Palestinian leaders? I mean, as an outsider, an onlooker, to me, this seems to be part of the same problem. If you want to quell the violence, how do you do it with more violence? Now, do you see this as a validity? I mean, where is this going to go? This obviously is going to affect the peace process in and of itself. It seems every time there's a suicide bombing, then you have an attack on these Palestinian leaders or the Hamas leaders, whoever they are, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. When is this ever going to come to an end?
Richard, let's pose that to the ambassador. It does seem as if both sides are saying, sure, let's have peace, you first.
Well, nothing new about that. I would say there's two ways to look at this. One is if there is what might be termed as a ticking bomb, the Israelis have a responsibility. If there is a Hamas operative coming to kill Israelis, the Israelis have the right to stop that person, no matter what it takes to stop that person, just as we would. So
is Arafat a ticking bomb?
Well, he's asking, the question is twofold. The one is, A, do you stop ticking bombs? In my mind, the answer is absolutely yes. B, do you go after the leaders? Well, obviously what the Israelis are trying to do is say, look, leaders won't have impunity. You think you can go ahead and you can do this, you can sacrifice others, but you remain immune? Forget it. That's the message the Israelis are trying to send. Now, especially as it relates to Hamas, because that's really what the question was about. It was more about Hamas than it is about Arafat. In my own mind, I've never thought the targeted killings made sense unless it was directly related to saving Israeli lives in that fashion. The targeted killings of the Hamas leaders, you know, the theory is they will be deterred if you do this. And I don't think the reality has demonstrated that that theory works. So I'm not a fan of it. Though I understand, as I said, the concept of self-defense, if there are Hamas operatives who are out there who are coming to kill Israelis, you have not only a right, you have a duty to go after them.
But in fact,
but I think
hasn't
going after the leaders doesn't seem to work so well.
Well, exactly. And hasn't it backfired that for every one you take out, there are three more standing behind them vowing vengeance?
No, I think here there is something else to be said about it, even if I'm not a fan of it. The fact is the Israelis may well be able to disrupt the operations of the organization. If all the leaders are basically unable to get together, unable to plan, unable to organize, unable to recruit, because they're always worried about their own protection, they're obviously less able to carry out attacks. So, I mean, there's a certain military logic to that. But there still is one other logic that for me, doesn't address what is fundamentally at issue. And I would say this applies to us as well. In the war on terror, there is a military component to this which is indispensable, and we cannot deny ourselves it, and the Israelis shouldn't deny themselves it. But there's also another component, which is there is a pool of ready recruits. And if you have an atmosphere that creates anger, resentment, alienation, then you're going to continue to find that the pool of ready recruits is always there and continues to grow. It's not so much that killing the leaders won't have some effect in terms of their organization, but it is that basically you're going to find many more people who are ready to go sacrifice themselves as suicide bombers, and unfortunately there the supply seems to be endless.
Let's take another call now. We're going to hear from Alberto in Needham, Massachusetts. Hello, Alberto. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. I wish to comment about the reaction by our own State Department. Yesterday, the spokesman, Richard Boucher, said that by expelling Arafat, we would only be giving him a wider range of action because he would be visiting heads of states. I'd like to point out that most heads of states who used to welcome Arafat are sick and tired of him. Perhaps Chirac or France might admit him because he has 6 million Muslims to worry about in his own country. But moreover, the Arab states who avowedly want to see a Palestinian state under Arafat consider him a pathological liar, and that's not my adjective. It's what Prince Bandar Sultan, the ambassador of Saudi Arabia to the United States, has called him in public, that most heads of states in the Arab world consider Arafat a liar. And therefore, the likelihood of Arafat finding broad support in exile, I think is minimal.
Well, Alberto, let's put that question to Ben Linfield from your perspective there in Jerusalem. How do you see that?
Well, certainly within the Arab world, Arafat would enjoy very wide support. And I actually disagree with the comment, because if you look at the European Union, even though Israel has been urging European Union officials to shun Arafat, the official policy of the EU has been to keep up its relations with Yasser Arafat. So I don't think everyone has followed the American line on that. However, I would like to say that I think the whole issue is academic, because I believe that the Israeli intent is to kill Arafat and not to expel him, provided they get the United States approval to do so.
Well, can we read the Bush administration's somewhat muted response, Ambassador Ross, as being kind of a go for it?
No, I don't think so. First, I don't know that what the administration is saying in public may not mirror what it's saying in private, at least in terms of the tone.
What are they saying in private, do you think?
Pardon me?
What are they saying in private?
Well, I suspect in private they're a lot more blunt that Israel needs to understand that this is not going to produce what it wants. I mean, this is what I think the administration is saying. This is not going to produce what you want. It is going to create a much worse environment for the United States in the Middle East, and we don't want you to do it. My impression is that the administration has been pretty blunt in private. Certainly the State Department has been blunt in private, and maybe not so blunt in public. I think, though, the critical question is sort of who the message is being passed to. One thing is very clear about this Israeli government. This Israeli prime minister believes that the one person who matters in the administration is the president. If he hears it from the president, then he knows for sure this is what matters to President Bush. I don't think he's heard it from the president at this point, although you do have to bear in mind, you know, going back 2 years, you have a promise from President Bush.
He said he wouldn't hurt him harm him.
That's right. So that has actually governed, I think, the Israeli policy. My own feeling, by the way, is that what emerged out of the Security Cabinet yesterday was, as I was suggesting, not just a message of coercion, but also a compromise within the Cabinet. I think Prime Minister Sharon is actually, among those within the Cabinet, probably the least willing to do this, because I think he sees that there is a price associated with it. I mean, one of the things you have to come back to is the following. My own view on the issue of expulsion would be different if the Israeli government were prepared to announce at the same time that they were embracing something like the Clinton ideas or the Clinton parameters as an approach to solving the problem, as a way of demonstrating there's a solution out there, but the only reason you can't achieve it is because Arafat truly is the obstacle. If you remove that obstacle, then we, the Israeli government, are prepared to do things you don't even expect.
Remind us what those Clinton parameters were, if you will.
Well, they were very far-reaching. There would have been a Palestinian state in about 95 to 97% of the West Bank, Gaza. The Arab part of East Jerusalem would have become the capital for that state. There would have been a right of return for Palestinian refugees to their state, but to return to their state, but not to Israel. There would have been an international security presence to provide for security of a Palestinian state that would have been non-militarized. Now, this is what Arafat said no to in the year 2000. And I think the critical point here is if you want to demonstrate that Arafat is the obstacle to peace, then prove it by showing how far you're prepared to go in a way that shows there's a solution out there, but he will always block it. Now, that, I think, is not something the Israeli government is prepared to embrace. So in a sense, one of the things that I think Prime Minister Sharon wrestles with is he prepared to pay the price of expulsion, either by offering a solution that would probably cost him a good chunk of his government, or by living with the consequences of it in the aftermath, which might be heightened chaos and even a greater level of violence for the next several months?
I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection on NPR. Well, let me pursue that point for just a moment, Ambassador Ross, because the U.S. also seems to be between a rock and a hard place here, because it's saying that it wants democracy in the Middle East, and yet this would be a big precedent if it backs removing a democratically elected leader. I mean, whether the United States likes him or not, Arafat has been elected by, 87% of the Palestinian people? So how do you justify that to the world?
Well, you know, I think his election fit the category of what I call plebiscites as opposed to a kind of genuine election, but let's put that to the side. I think the real issue here is not whether the U.S. is going to be supportive of this. I think the question is going to be how opposed are we going to be? The administration will not support it. You raised the question before, what is the administration doing in private? And the real issue is, if the administration is truly opposed to it, then they'll communicate that unmistakably at the highest level. Anything less than that will probably be taken by the Israelis and Prime Minister Sharon as a yellow light. Not a green light, but certainly not a red light.
Ben, I want to bring you back into the conversation as well and get your thoughts on what each of the players needs to do now to keep the lid on.
I think really the only player that matters is the United States, and I couldn't tell you the specifics of what it needs to do, but it just has to get more involved in a much more serious way than it has in recent months. I believe that not only Arafat and Sharon are responsible for the demise of Abu Mazen Mahmoud Abbas, who was very pragmatic and seem to be a very viable peace partner potentially. I think Washington basically cut him adrift by not giving him the support he needed, by not pressing the Israelis to make concessions. I mean, the ideas of Ariel Sharon's concessions to Abu Mazen was to do a prisoner release and release prisoners who were going to get out in a week or two anyway. And this just made him look ridiculous in front of his own people. I think we need a very strong United States intervention and pressure on both sides.
And is it your sense that the next time there's a suicide bombing that, you know, that could be it for Arafat?
Well, it will be it for Arafat if there's a green light from Washington. We're back to that. It depends on the United States.
And Ambassador Ross, what's your sense of what everyone needs to do at this point?
Well, I do think you got to find some way to create a dramatic reason for everybody to take a step back. If you don't have that, you're just going to have a further deterioration. And I do think the next suicide bomb or the one after that will lead to the expulsion. As I said before, I don't think the decision the Israelis made yesterday was a decision to go act, but it certainly begins to remove their options for not acting later on. Right now, I think I would like to see the United States come up with a common initiative with Arab leaders. Arab leaders would assume a public posture of condemning what Hamas and Islamic Jihad have done from the standpoint of threatening the Palestinian interest and the cause itself, justifying a crackdown on them. So in accord with what the roadmap called for, which was a dismantling of the terror capabilities and infrastructure, going to Arafat as well and making it clear that he should not block what Abu Allah would do in terms of organizing the security structure and allowing him to carry out the confrontation. And the U.S., for its part, would work on the Israelis and be very clear in terms of the Israelis now actually freezing settlement activity, dismantling the unauthorized settler outposts, and assuming the Palestinians begin to act on the terror infrastructure, then the Israelis could begin to lift the siege and to lift the checkpoints, which would change the day-to-day life for Palestinians.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. We thank you so much, Ambassador Ross. Appreciate your being with us. And Ben Linfield, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ambassador Dennis Ross is director of the Washington Institute. Ben Linfield is a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor in Jerusalem. We spoke earlier with Israeli Cabinet Minister Uzi Landau and Sari Nusabi, president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR.